Good evening. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, folks, you had 12 hours of the Hour of the Time on asset protection, offshore asset protection. And I hope you all learned a lot. We're going to open the phones tonight and see if any of you have any questions that need to be cleared up about that. If not, we'll just have an open topic, and you can talk about anything you want. Lots of things have been happening. Oh, boy, have they ever. The rumor mongers and the liars and deceivers and deception artists and con artists and disinformation agents and have just gone right over the cliff. Some of them are still in the air falling toward the bottom. Most of them are splattered on the rocks. Some of them are floating in the water, all smashed to bits. It's incredible. I don't know how everybody can keep falling for the same crap from the same people over and 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 over again. Beats me, guys.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside today. The music died. So bye bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And then good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die." Did you write the book of love? And do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells us so. And do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? Well, I know that you're in love with him, 'cause I saw you dancing. You both kicked off your shoes. Man, I dig those rhythmic blues. I was a lonely teenage bronc and buck with a pink carnation and a pickup truck. But I knew I...
Like I said, we had a tremendous power surge here. Our trip-off, I guess it is. And lost everything for just a split second. And I've got it all back on now. I hope. Good evening, you're on the air.
You're still on the air.
Oh, that's wonderful, great. So.
Okay, then. I thought I'd just let you know.
We didn't lose the phone line.
No, you did.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, that'll do.
Okay, thank you. 520-333-4578 is the number. Phones will be open tonight for the rest of the broadcast. If you have any questions about the last 12 broadcasts, now is the time to ask those questions. If you don't, then the topic for tonight is going to be open for whatever you want to talk about. And while we're waiting for somebody to call at 520-333-4578, by the way, it's still raining here. We had two days of sunshine over the last 7 solid weeks. It's rained every day and every night except for those two 24-hour periods, which I believe was Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday. I forget which exactly. Good evening. You're on the air.
Is this the Wizard?
This is the Wizard.
Well, it's I'm glad that I got the chance to talk to you. I have a couple questions that I'd like to go over with you.
Sure.
I'm interested in taking my investment property and putting it into an offshore IBC.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little confused as to whether you need a purchase and sale agreement or just a quitclaim to transfer that property.
Well, you see, any time that you just do a quitclaim,
yes,
even though it's perfectly lawful and legal, and even though the Constitution says we're free to do those things,
yes,
the IRS says you're trying to get out of paying taxes.
Okay.
And I don't know how they're doing it, but they're making it stick in some courts, not all courts.
A purchase and sale agreement would be well advised.
Yeah, and for real value. And make the sales contract out for, 500 years if you want to.
Okay.
Then make it payable to you, your heirs, or assigns for the term of the contract. And that way, the IBC and the IBC has to make payments to you for that property over that period of time,
okay,
and you can make the payment small enough so that it doesn't do any damage to anybody.
Right.
And you have a right to contract, and you don't have to charge any interest or anything.
The second issue would be if I have an annuity or IRS or 401k, can they be transferred also without suffering some kind of tax consequence?
That I don't know. I know that if you withdraw an annuity or a what do they call those, T-bills, or not T-bills, but
401Ks,
IRAs, things like that, there's definite penalties for that. And the IRS monitors every one of those things, so then they're going to know you did it.
Right.
But if you do it, just like you did the property, there will be no problem.
Okay.
And the money, it's, in other words, they're buying it.
And is this $50 report that you're selling, is that specific that would actually show me how to draw up a good contract that would not be
balanced? No, it's not a treatise on contracts. It's a report on offshore trusts, IBCs, and it's a general overall educational tool that will help those people who don't understand a darn thing about any of it feel like they know enough to start asking some questions so that they can go ahead and do it. It's a good report. And if you use that report in conjunction with the tapes of the last 12 broadcasts, you'll have the benefit of the information in the report and all the information that I've gained over all the years that I've been doing this.
Okay. Well, I continue to listen because I think your sermons or education is very good.
Sermons?
I guess it's the wrong word.
Well, that's okay. If it's a ministry, it's a ministry of freedom, and if you want to call them sermons on freedom, then that's okay with me.
Okay. Where would you suggest I get some education as to how to draw up a good contract? The other day, you brought up something that I hadn't considered. That's what made me concerned. That was to put into the contract that the terms of the conditions could not be revealed.
Yeah.
That has a lot of merit there.
It sure does. And
but there must be other things that also need to be included into something like that for protection.
Well, I have no qualms about sitting down and writing a contract for myself. And I always do that. If I don't, I make sure I go over whoever, the contract from whoever did write it. And if I don't agree with something, I'll just line it out, initial every line on each side that I lined out, and I'll write in what I think should be there. And usually gets accepted. But that's because I've been doing this for a lot of years. So and I understand exactly why you feel that you need that, because the laws can be tricky in the hands of a tricky lawyer. And if you don't have a good ironclad contract, and the IRS will spend $1 million to break a contract to collect $1,000. Can you believe these guys? I mean, they're just absolutely out of their mind. But that's what they'll do. So I don't know where you can go to learn how to do that. I've learned it by getting burnt over the years, by not reading the fine print and finding out that it said something I should have read, and then learning that I could use those techniques and that kind of wording and to be very careful and always understand that what you write or what you say could be interpreted to mean something other than what you wanted it to mean if it's not done correctly. And so, but I don't want you to learn that way. So I would suggest that maybe you get with a good contract lawyer. There are lawyers who specialize in contracts. And if you have enough money to hire his talent, you might want to use him. Otherwise, you could maybe take some courses at a university near you in contract law. You know, you don't have to be going for a law degree to take courses at a law school.
Sure.
You could do those kinds of things. Or you could just go to a good law library and find some textbooks on contract law. And do a whole bunch of self-study.
If I wanted everything in my household covered under the IBC or a trust, would I have to name every single item I own, or can I do some kind of umbrella that covers everything?
Well, the problem is if you do some umbrella thing and you're hiding something in there that's of value, or maybe there's something in there that's a lot of value that you didn't specifically name, and they don't feel that the sale was of enough money, and you're trying to get away without, you know, paying taxes. Or these guys spend their life just trying to destroy people. So if I were you, I would be very careful and take the time to do it.
Okay.
It doesn't really take that much time. Just list everything, list how old it is, list the condition it's in, and list the value. And another thing that will help you and back you up to prove, you know, what you wrote there, that you didn't lie about it, is make a videotape.
All right, sure.
So that you have the list, the bill of sale, the contract, and a videotape.
Okay. Well, I think that just about covers all the questions I have. I look forward to listening to you in coming lecture.
Well, thank you.
One of your students.
And thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye now.
520-333-4578. Those were some real good questions. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I remember towards the beginning of the series, you said that Ted Kennedy was on the phone with attorneys for about 12 hours after the Mary Jo Kopechne incident.
No, I didn't say that. I said it was 12 hours before he personally reported what had happened, and during that time he met with his attorneys. I didn't say anything about the phone.
Oh,
he went all the way home. He changed clothes. He met with his attorneys, and it was 12 hours after the accident before he said a word about it.
I see.
To the proper authorities.
Well,
that's what I said.
The question I was asking here is that some of the socialist politicians that believe in a graduated income tax, but some of these rich socialists, when it comes to theirs, they want it to where they don't have to pay taxes. Is that
they
correct?
Don't. They don't.
So that they believe in a graduated income tax for everybody else but themselves.
You would be amazed in what they believe in and what they don't believe in. You see, socialism has nothing to do with what it's propounded to do. Socialism is the best method in the world to enslave a great number of people by those who want to enslave them, and they still keep their wealth.
So, in other words, they're hypocrites.
Absolutely. You didn't think for one minute in the Soviet Union that old Khrushchev was poor, did you?
No,
not at all. But isn't everybody under a communist type of system supposed to be equally...
Proletariat.
Yeah.
Well, it's more of a managerial revolution than a proletariat revolution, was it not?
Well, you see, if you really read what these people say instead of what some professor tells you they meant in college,
yes.
If you really read what they wrote and what they say, they make it very clear. For instance, Karl Marx hated the common man. He hated blacks. He was a Jew who hated Jews. He hated people who succeeded and were successful and earned money because he never succeeded at anything in his entire life. He said clearly that socialism was for the enslavement of the masses.
Yeah, I've got a book by Richard Wurmbrand on Karl Marx, and he abused his wife.
Yeah, he did.
He was supposed to be against the oppression of the proletariat, but he abused his own family.
That's right.
So he was a hypocrite.
That's correct. He was also a racist. The reason he was able to design such a system is because he hated life. He hated himself. He hated everything about living. The man was just absolutely miserable. And so he created this system so that everybody could be equally miserable. And he hoped, what he hoped is that if he lived to see it come to pass, that he could be up on top turning the screws.
But in regards to trust, though, are there a lot of what you call limousine liberals in this country that have trust?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, sirree.
So they believe in liberal socialism in the American government and graduated income taxes. Except for themselves.
What they believe in is controlling other people with their wealth in a manner that nobody can point to them and say, he did it to me.
I was thinking during your series, is there going to be a stampede of limousine liberals to get offshore trust?
There doesn't need to be a stampede. They've all got them already.
Oh.
They've had them for years. The only people who are just finding out about this are people like you, the average Joe. Rich people have been using trusts and IBCs for hundreds of years.
I find it odd how Ted Kennedy is always railing about the working poor and how we ought to raise the minimum wage, but he voted yes on NAFTA, yes on gas.
That's right.
So it's okay to pay somebody 50 cents an hour in Mexico. But
yeah.
you got to pay $5.15 here.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes a lot of sense to him because he's one of the ruling class.
Yeah. Well,
see, socialism does not help the poor. It does not help the proletariat. It does not help the working man. It doesn't help anybody but the rich, the wealthy, and the powerful.
Yeah, I've heard Ted Turner say that if you want to get rich in a capitalist country, go into business. If you want to get rich in a communist country, go into government.
That's right.
And I think in his way of thinking, it doesn't matter which one you do.
In people who think that way, the only thing that matters is that they're rich and you're not, and they can control you with that money.
So... more accurately, Marxist or communist countries are totalitarian, not true communism.
Well, that's correct. There's never been an incidence of true communism in the history of communism, and there's never been an incidence where socialism has ever worked.
Yeah, or you could call it, Solzhenitsyn called it totalitarianism.
Yes, that's correct.
And I've read a book by John Stormer that after the communist collectivists took control in the Soviet Union, the grain harvest went down.
Yes, it did.
And the collectivist farms didn't work as good as the farms under the czars.
That's right. And all of a sudden, they had less food. And, you know, a couple of million people starved.
And,
You know that Hitler was a socialist, don't you?
Yeah, that's one thing I've...
Now, why do they keep calling him right wing? Why do they call Nazis right wing when Nazi means socialist?
Well, that's what I've wondered. As I understand it, Nazi in the German, didn't that mean National Socialist Party?
Yes.
Well, then he wasn't a right-winger then.
No, he wasn't. That's socialism's nasty little secret.
And well, in the media and everything, they say, well, these young Germans, neo-Nazis, are right-wingers, like in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or other newspapers. And here the name of their party was National Socialist Party, correct?
Yeah, they're socialists.
So they were...
If you ever go to any place where Nazis group together, such as the Aryan Nations up in Idaho, you'll find them living in a camp under communism.
So it was just one socialist regime against another in World War II, as far as Russia and...
No. There is a big ideological difference between the avowed socialists who don't understand the goal that Marx set out for socialism, which was the end result of communism, and hardline communists. So the battle for power in Germany was between the communists and the National Socialists, and the National Socialists won that battle. And then they had an alliance with Stalin. Remember that? Hitler had an alliance with Stalin. Stalin was actually supporting National Socialism because Stalin knows that the end result of socialism ultimately is communism.
Well, are many of the people in the Washington establishment that are socialists, they're like people in the Washington Post, Katherine Graham, and these types of people, they all have trusts?
Yes, they certainly do. Trusts, offshore bank accounts, IBCs, all kinds of things. You would be amazed. Haven't you ever wondered why they never get sued?
No.
Well, that's why. They don't own anything.
Well, that's amazing.
Isn't it?
Our media truly is controlled by what you could call totalitarians.
Yes.
Masquerading as socialists.
Oh, yes.
That are hypocrites.
Yes. Haven't you ever wondered why you can turn from ABC to CBS to NBC to CNN and hear exactly the same stories using the same words and phrases, all probably written by the same person?
Yeah, I think they're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations, even the guy on PBS, Jim Lehrer.
Yeah, but there's nobody in the Council of Foreign Relations sitting there writing, chucking out these stories. But they are all in concert together. And the news is the same on every channel, without exception.
You mentioned that one of the biggest threat they fear is an actual political threat. And there's a lot of alternate media talk show hosts now, like Chuck Carter, that talk about the free trade and the CFR and everything. But you're saying that what they really fear is an actual imminent political threat.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So if you're just putting the information out, that's not really...
That's not a threat. When you can mobilize people to become a political force and go to the polls and topple the power structure that exists in Washington, D.C. today, that's a political threat.
I see.
That's when they come out with somebody like Perot to divide that threat so that it's not a threat anymore.
Right. And I thought it's possible Pat Buchanan might be controlled opposition.
Absolutely.
He might
yes.
The Reform Party just to split the... nationalist vote.
Yep. Yeah, Pat Buchanan is not on our side, never has been.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing. You would think...
Read Hegel. Read Marx. Read Lenin. Read Mao. Read Golitsyn and Gorbachev. They don't make any secret of it. It's all there. Exactly how it works. And...
But it seemed like the defining point for him is when he endorsed Dole in 96. I mean, he was completely at odds with Dole on every issue.
Plus one of his elections was clearly, he won it. So it had to be crooked, and he didn't even challenge it. That was an election that took place right here in my state of Arizona. But anyway, I got to get some other people in here.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Bye.
520-333-4578 is the number. And we're taking calls for the rest of the hour. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Let me turn my radio down. Sorry about that.
Well, I won't be able to hear for 3 weeks now.
Yeah, me neither. open lines, right?
Yeah.
Can you take a few minutes to discuss the difference in philosophy between Plato and Socrates? Between Plato and Aristotle.
You want me to discuss the difference in philosophies between Plato and Aristotle in less than 25 minutes? Is that correct? This is an open call-in show. This is not a course in philosophy. But to cut it to the quick,
okay.
Aristotle believed in the triumph of reason. Plato believed in the triumph of a system, which he called the Republic. Francis Bacon wrote a treatise after Plato's writings called The New Atlantis, and that's what somebody is trying to build here in America right now. Have you read it?
Well, Aristotle was a pupil of Plato's, was he not?
Yes, he was. Doesn't mean he agreed with everything that he said. I've been the pupil of a lot of teachers that I strongly disagreed with. But when it came time to answer the question on the test, I answered it the way they wanted me to so I could pass the course.
Well, Aristotle didn't do that, did he?
Didn't do what?
He didn't answer the question that was on. He was a free thinker.
Well, he was a free thinker after he ceased being a pupil. But during his sessions with his teacher, I don't know that he didn't do that or that he did do it. I do know that his philosophy is quite a bit different from Plato's.
I still don't understand the difference between Aristotle and Plato.
Well, I would suggest that you read one of the great works of Aristotle and then read Plato's New Republic, and I think that ought to be pretty clear to you.
What would you recommend then?
Pardon?
What would you recommend as far as the works of Aristotle versus Plato? What works would you recommend?
Well, go to the library and look them up. Do your own research.
Well, Plato's famous work was, of course, The Republic.
Yeah.
Aristotle's was his Ethics.
Well, that's one of them. I wouldn't call that the greatest, but that's one of them.
So what is Aristotle's greatest work then?
Well, I'm going to let you look that up.
I thought this was open lines, Bill.
Well, it is open lines, but open lines is to have some kind of a conversation, not some great classroom on philosophy. That's not what you call open lines. You can't discuss this subject in 20 minutes, which means you want the whole rest of the broadcast, and I can't give it to you.
Well, you spent 10 minutes on the last caller. Could you spend 10 minutes on me?
No.
No?
No. I didn't mean to spend 10 minutes on the last caller, and I don't think it was 10 minutes anyway.
I see. Okay, Bill. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Gee. He wants me to get all scholarly and spend, an hour on a recitation on the difference between Plato's philosophy and Aristotle's philosophy. I would say Founding Fathers had a lot to say about that, folks, quite a bit. They took quite a bit of the founding of this nation from a lot of the different philosophers. They took quite a bit from Aristotle and some from Plato. But they would never have dreamed of creating a Plato's Republic in this country. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. I heard very little of your series on trust, but enough to know that I want to get the information on it. It sounds very interesting. And I've got three questions for you. Concerning trust, I'm wondering, when you're an employed person, like a lot of us working stiffs out here, can your paycheck, instead of being paid to you, be paid to the trust?
If you work for the trust and the trust contracts with the company that desires your services to provide your services, yes.
So you mean, like, if you work for General Motors, do you think they would cooperate in paying into a trust instead of paying you?
You have to talk that over with General Motors.
Okay.
But let me ask you this. Why would you opt to work for somebody else? When with your brain that God gave you, you can work for yourself and make probably 100.
Okay.
But let me ask you this. Why would you opt to work for somebody else? When with your brain that God gave you, you can work for yourself and make probably 100 times more, leading up to maybe thousands of times more?
Oh, well, that's a question I've been asking myself for a long time. I just don't...
Well, stop asking the question and answer it.
Okay, I don't feel that I've ever been creative enough to think of something to do on my own to make money.
You don't even have to think of it. Look around to see what somebody else has done successfully in another area that is lacking where you live.
All right.
Something that people might just go crazy over and give it to them. Don't use the same name. Don't steal any of their patented techniques or whatever you call it, but you can do it.
Okay.
If you want to learn how to be successful, watch successful people.
Now, I don't want to take too long because I don't want you to have another whiner like your last caller. My next question is, now I heard you say things like irrevocable trust.
Uh-huh.
And, of course...
irrevocable means that once the trust is formed, and whatever property has been placed into it, by whatever means it's been placed into it, you can't change your mind and take it back. You can't dissolve the trust. You can't say, oh, I didn't mean to do that. It's irrevocable.
Okay. Now, isn't a trust something that has a board of trustees?
Yes. But it does not necessarily have to be more than one trustee. It depends upon the type of trust. Depends upon the laws governing trusts in the jurisdiction where the trust is formed. It depends upon the contract that forms the trust, and all kinds of things.
Okay. The aspect of that sounded scary to me, and I'm coming from this without any knowledge, is taking everything you have, be it a lot or very meager, and putting it in the control of somebody else.
But let me sort of break in here. I understand
what
you're talking about, and a lot of Americans feel that way because we've been brought up to believe that if we don't own anything, we are nothing, and that if we don't have anything, that we're have absolutely no control over our lives. If you do this correctly, you may not own it, but you control it. And they're really, when you come down to it, there's a lot of people who own a lot of things but don't have any control over any of it. I'd rather not own it and control it. It solves a lot of problems.
Okay. And my last question is just a completely different thing. I'm just wondering what your take is, not on the character, the crazy character of Jesse Ventura, but on Jesse Ventura politically.
I think politically he gave a lot of people hope that maybe shouldn't have been given that hope. Because Jesse Ventura is a flash in the pan. It's not going to happen all over the country. The people who are in control are solidly in control.
Right.
And there's not going to be a political resolution to this this New World Order thing that's happening. It's going to come to a clash of arms, which means a war.
I would love to hear you interview him.
I would like to be able to do that. And I might even, you know, try to get something done about that. I don't know even how to go about it. But I might because I would be interested in his answers. You see, he hasn't really done anything that's any different than what they were doing in the past, has he?
You know, I don't know, because I don't live in Minnesota, and I have no idea what he has signed his name to or initiated. I really don't know. All I know is interviews that I see with the guy, and I did see where a bunch of welfare recipients held a demonstration at a state office.
Oh, but that they're demonstrating against what's been going on all over the country.
Right.
They're making welfare recipients get off of welfare after they've been on there for 2 years.
But I found his reaction kind of refreshing in that he walked out there and said, "What do I owe you? I don't owe you anything."
Yeah, I saw that same news broadcast.
Yeah, why should I pay your way?
Well, that's exactly what I feel too.
Yeah, me too.
But the truth is, see, he's just talking to that one welfare mother who's coming to the end of her 2 years. Okay,
right.
She doesn't want to go back to work.
Well,
what about all these other welfare recipients?
Mm-hmm.
What about Social Security? That's not an insurance policy.
That is welfare.
What about Medicare and Medicaid?
Welfare.
What about general relief?
Welfare.
What about all of these other handout programs?
Exactly.
You see?
Mm-hmm. All the more reason to get in a trust.
Yeah.
Bill, I don't want to tie it up, but thank you for having me on, and thank you for being there for so long and putting so much into this.
Well, thank you for that.
There are so much of us who think so much of you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All righty. Take care and God bless your family.
Thank you for calling.
Okay. Bye.
520-333-4578. I always like to hear something like that because I hear it so sparsely, you know, like very few and far between. 520-333-4578. We'll be taking your calls for the rest of the broadcast. Anybody out there from Minnesota care to tell us if Jesse Ventura has actually, you know, made a big difference? I don't really know if he has or not. I'd like to find out. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Bill. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I used to listen to you when I was a teenager with my father, and I got out of the Navy. I joined the Navy for a while.
How old are you?
I'm 22. I just turned 22 last week.
Okay.
And, just got recently listening to you again. But I'm somewhat out of date. But I just had a question. Well, a few questions, actually. When I was over in Japan, that's where I was stationed at.
That's where I went to high school.
Excuse me?
That's where I went to high school. Beautiful country.
Oh, yes. I was stationed in Atsugi.
Uh-huh.
And,
Atsugi Naval Air Station.
Yes. Naval Air Station.
Uh-huh.
And, let me see. When I was over there, I remember Admiral Borda.
Uh-huh.
Chief of Naval Operations.
Uh-huh.
Get the news over there, it's quite sketchy. What's the whole story on that?
Well, the whole story is he did not commit suicide. Admiral Borda was murdered.
That's what I thought.
No doubt about it whatsoever. Do you think a man of that stature who had gone through all of the political machinations and everything that he had to do to reach the position of Chief of Naval Operations, the highest ranking admiral in the United States Navy, the most powerful Navy in the world, do you think that he would go and shoot himself in the chest, no less?
Twice, I believe.
Twice? Just because somebody said he wasn't supposed to wear a little ribbon?
A ribbon discrepancy. Yeah.
He honestly thought that he had earned the right to wear it, and it wasn't even an important thing. It was like a campaign thing, you know, that you were in a certain war zone at a certain time. And he was in and out of there all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was really supposed to wear it or not, but who gives a damn? I know damn well that it wouldn't have caused him to shoot himself, especially out in a yard in the chest in daytime.
Yeah.
You know, bullshit. The man was murdered. He was one of my, you know, I really admired him a lot. He rose from the enlisted ranks. He was a seaman, chip and rust just like I was when I was a seaman. And he rose to the highest level in the United States Navy. I had tremendous admiration and respect for him. He didn't know. He did not commit suicide. He was murdered.
No, I didn't know
stinks to high heaven.
Yeah. Let me see, another thing. Well, let's just say hypothetically, you know, you just said earlier that it's going to be a clash of arms. Let's say hypothetically we are to eventually win and gain back G's control. Then, how do we just, what do we do then? We just can't reinstitute constitutional government because they have depraved society so that they are incapable of exercising control.
Well, that's not true. It is the people who became incapable of exercising control. It's the people of America who ceased to be the watchdog of government. It's the people in America who allowed things to become corrupt. And corruption starts at the local level.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C. is a reflection of the entire nation.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I got to let you go. Get somebody else in here.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Somebody's out there timing the calls.
10 minutes, huh?
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank
you. Yeah, I know he wasn't on for 10 minutes, but it doesn't matter. 520-333-4578 is the number. No, folks, it wasn't the Constitution that failed. It is the people of America who failed the Constitution. Remember, the Constitution is just a piece of paper, a contract. It is the government. We are the ones who allowed it to be taken away, torn up, shredded, urinated upon, flushed. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Bill, are you just talking about trust tonight?
Talking about whatever you want to talk about. If you
okay.
want to talk about trust, that's fine.
Well, I was just trying to get in because I've been taking the American Longevity products, and I wanted to kind of let you know my personal testimony about it.
Well, go ahead.
Well, when Dr. Wallach was on your show back in the, I believe it was in the spring or maybe the early part of this year, I got to talk to him when he was on your show, and I had a chronic heel pain that I've had ever since high school. It was an old track injury. And it was really bothering me over this past year. And he told me basically, you know, take my product for 3 to 6 months and it should go away. And so I basically got started on the minerals, and I took the extra calcium tablets. And in 2 months, I noticed a change. But, of course, I was thinking it might just all be in my head. And after 3 months, my heel pain was gone, and it's still gone. And I've been able to, I like to run, and I've been able to run a lot this summer, and it's gone.
Well, that's wonderful.
It's amazing. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
Nothing's ever I've never quite got over the injury. And
how old are you?
I'm 35.
Oh, so it wasn't just a couple years ago.
No, this was an injury that I got when I was 17.
Oh, I had to ask because your voice sounds, you know, like 21, 22, 23.
Well, I look kind of young, too. I don't know. Maybe it just goes all together. But it's something I hurt when I was 17. And I kind of, you know, I've always kind of remained active, you know, playing different sports and things. And it's gone.
Well, that's wonderful.
It's amazing too. I have an uncle who's a chiropractor, and he just will not believe that it has anything to do with nutrition. He doesn't quite understand.
Are you kidding? Chiropractors usually are the vanguard for the nutritional movement.
Yeah, I know. He's just real stubborn, but see, he's a runner too, and he's only about 5 years older than me. And I just plan to keep on, eating right and taking these products and. I think he'll see in a couple of years or maybe even sooner than that. How amazing it really is.
Well, great.
And, I mean, I just can't tell people enough. I try to tell everybody that I come in contact with that, this is really something. This is this gets to the root of the problem of everything. And I just wanted to thank you because I would have never heard of Dr. Wallach, I don't think, except for your show.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay, Bill?
You wouldn't have never heard of Dr. Wallach if it hadn't worked for me first.
Yeah, well, that's another thing is I read your book a long time ago, and I've been listening to you a long time, and I know you don't talk about it much. People don't realize that the accidents you've been in if they haven't read your book. And, you're not a complainer because you've dealt with this, every day since, When did these accidents happen to you? Was this in the late 70s?
Oh, gee. Yeah, the first one was, they weren't accidents, by the way.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Not accidents, but...
No, they weren't accidents. They were attempts to shut me up.
Yeah.
I think it was 1979, let me see, 1976, 77, no, it was 1976, by the way.
76?
Yeah.
Did both attempts on your life happen that same year?
Well, it's been more than two attempts on my life, but there were two really bad ones.
Well, the one where you lost your leg?
Yeah.
Okay. But, no, really, I mean, your testimony was one thing, and then, hey, I can't believe anything Bill Cooper says. I got to check it out myself, and I did, and it worked. And I'm a very fortunate individual. I don't get sick that often. And now I really plan not to get sick.
Well, good for you.
Thanks, Bill. I'll let somebody else get on.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. And I'm glad you take my advice. Don't believe what I say. Don't believe what anybody says. Listen to everybody. Read everything. Believe absolutely nothing unless you can prove it in your own research. And if you can't do research or won't do research or think that it's, beyond your capability, then you're always going to be the puppet on the string for those who do. Those who are pulling the strings. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing this evening?
Good.
Yeah, I've been listening to your program. I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I'm laying over here in Redding, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And I find the programming on the station quite interesting and informative. I think you're right about, restore us back to the Constitution, constitutional right that probably is going to come to armed conflict. And I think the our government is quite paranoid about this.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh yes, they are, because they realize how weak they are. You see, nobody ever got goosebumps when the United Nations flag passed by. Nobody wants to die for the United Nations flag. But we'll die for Old Glory. I will. I'll die for Old Glory. I'll die for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
I'll fight for my constitutional rights too.
Well, then.
Anyway, I got some interesting information Saturday, and that was quite disturbing. So I'm a ham radio operator, and I'm a very serious collector of military radios. I got the pretty good sized collection. I also have a military vehicle with a shelter on it. And I went to a military vehicle show out of Toby Hanna in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the word right from people that are in the military surplus business, as well as a DMRO person that works at Toby Hanna, that all military communications equipment is being destroyed. Are you familiar with the PRC 77 backpack radio?
Yeah, PRC 77, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, here's some figures. I think this last week they took 1,600 of them out of Toby Hanna and smashed them.
Why?
Well, they don't want the public to have them. They're afraid they're going to get in the wrong hands, and they're afraid they're going to be used against them.
You know what? There is a huge underground in this country of men and women like me.
Yeah.
And we've already got everything we need to fight a war for 15 years. We don't need anything else.
Yeah.
They're too late.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's just to show how wasteful this is. I have a lot of friends of mine, about three or four friends of mine, that are in the military surplus business. And they say, they told me that if they, that a military surplus deal will pay about $50 for PRC 77.
Mm-hmm.
And if they scrap them, they're getting about $5 for them scrapped.
Mm-hmm.
And the real sickening thing, that really the thing that made me go through the roof about this whole thing, is that after all this radio equipment is ground up and scrapped and everything, the scrap is being sold to communist China.
Doesn't surprise me a bit. You see, the New World Order is going to be
a social... Doesn't surprise me either, but...
Excuse me. This is called a dialogue. which means yep. when I'm talking, since I let you talk, you got to let me talk.
Yes, sir.
The New World Order is going to be a totalitarian socialist state.
Yeah.
So it's no surprise to me. I don't understand why it's a surprise to anybody else that they favor the socialist and communist states.
Yeah.
That's what the world is going to be.
Yeah.
If they have their way.
Yeah, I think we've seen our best day.
Well, I sure have. I hope I could look forward to some more good days, but, I think about 1968 was the last of them.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there, because I just turned 60 years old, and I've just seen what they've done with gun control, and I've experienced the loss of a lot of our freedoms, and it's sickening.
Yeah, I'm going to let you go.
Keep up the good work there, and I would be one that would be willing to fight for my constitutional rights.
Good for you. But they're creator-endowed rights, protected and recognized by the Constitution.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks
for
calling.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye.
That's right, folks. They are not constitutional rights. They are creator-endowed rights, recognized and protected by the Constitution. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill. This is Gary Stone from Amherst Junction.
Hi, Gary.
Yeah, I talked to Mr. Gargan. He's taken over the Reform Party as a chairman. I talked to him for some length on one of the talk shows a couple weeks ago, and I was a member of the Reform Party, see, and I quit because the Reform Party in the state of Wisconsin, they had Senator Feinstein of the Democratic Party as their guest speaker. And I thought that was crazy. They would let our people speak at the Democratic Convention, you know.
Yeah.
And I told Mr. Gargan that a lot of people are disappointed with Perot and the Reform Party because they haven't faced the issues like the United Nations. And Mr. Gargan promised me that things were going to be different now. He lives in Florida.
Yeah.
And he's moving the headquarters for the Reform Party to the state of Florida, where he lives now.
Well, we'll see how different it's going to be.
Yeah, and he was pretty high on Jesse Ventura, but I didn't want to bring that up, too, you know, because you know how you're cut off on talk radio if you stretch it out too long.
Uh-huh.
So we can only wait and see on this now, you know.
That's true.
You should try and get Mr. Gargan on your program instead of Ventura.
I have this theory about professional politicians. I don't care what party they represent. They're all full of crap, and they're all liars. And over my lifetime, I've never been disappointed yet. I've never turned out to be wrong about that yet.
Well, we got to have somebody in office, right?
Yeah. So why are we keep electing politicians that we know are just a bunch of big liars?
Yeah.
Opportunists and stab us in the back the first chance they get. Why don't we elect some citizen statesman for a change? Somebody who's willing to go there and do the right thing, even if it meant they got shot right in front of the Senate because they told the truth. Where are they? Thomas Jefferson would have done it. Ben Franklin would have done it. George Washington would have done it. Are you trying to tell me there is nobody left of that stature in this country? And all that we have to elect, to send to Washington, or to send to our state house, or to put in our county board of supervisors, are lying, stinking, rotten politicians?
Well, the main thing is, any political party, whether it's a third party or the Democrat, Republican, they always want somebody with stature, recognizable, like a Hollywood star.
Who cares what they want? How about what we want? I just get so sick at heart when I hear somebody say, well, we got to elect somebody, don't we?
Yeah, well, I don't mean myself. I'm just saying the way they operate, you know.
Of course you meant yourself.
No, I didn't.
Remember, a deal with the devil is still a deal with the devil. Whether it's lesser or greater evil, it's still evil.
That's right.
And every time we elect one of these guys, it's a deal with the devil.
That's
let
right.
you go.
If they ever did did anything for the people, I think I'd die of a heart attack.
Well, they don't necessarily have to do anything for the people. They just have to do what's right for America. There ain't none of them doing that. Thanks for calling.
All righty.
Boy. Well, I think maybe this will tell the tale. Maybe. I think. I don't know. Maybe it will. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie, Pooh, and Allison. I love you. You are in my thoughts, in my dreams. You are always in my heart.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Oh, where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. Rain is gonna fall. What did you hear, my blue-eyed son? Oh, what did you hear, my darling young one? Heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. Heard the roar of a wave that creeped around the whole world. Heard 100 drummers whose hands were amazing. Heard 10,000 whispers nobody listened. Heard one person sob, heard many people laughing. Heard the song of a bullet who died in the gutter. Heard the sound of a gun who cried in the alley. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. It's gonna fall. Who did you meet, my blue-eyed son? Who did you meet, my darling young one? I met a young child beside this pony. I met a white man who walked a black dog. I met a young woman whose body was burning. I met a young bird, she gave me a rainbow. I met one man who was wounded in love. I met another man who was wounded in hatred. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. It's gonna fall. What do you do now, my blue-eyed son? Oh, what will you do now, my darling young one? I'm going back out for the rain starts to fall in. I'll walk through the depths of the deepest dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty. With some of their poison, I'll flatten their wings.